Okay, Brust der weg.
Ja, wir schweifen ab.
Und willkommen beim
Be Stucker Podcast.
Ja. Mm. Super, Derek.
Very fine.
Okay, wir schreiben Folge 219, haben den sehr vielten August 2015.
Ja, 25.
Und befinden uns im alten AKH in einem neuen Innenhof mit hoffentlich gar keinen Störgeräuschen. Ja, das Ganze findet statt mit freundlicher Unterstützung von wukonik.com.
Ah ja, der Internetagentur aus Österreich, vom Jörg. Vielen Dank an dieser Stelle.
Und ganz vielen Dank an unsere lieben Flatterer, Ayuvo und Bernd Schlapsi. Mhm. Und alle anderen Flatterer, die uns nicht namentlich flattern. Dann würde ich sagen, fangen wir direkt an. Nein, frag du mich, was ich erlebt habe, dann macht das Sinn.
Okay, was hast du erlebt?
Ich habe den Derek getroffen, der hier die Einleitung gemacht hat, in der Scratch-Konferenz in Amsterdam und er ist jetzt in Wien, habe ihn gleich mitgebracht und deshalb wird ein Teil dieses Podcasts auf Englisch sein.
Yes, we will try our best with our English.
I will try my best too.
Perfect.
Perfect. Okay, wir haben den Derek schon mit ungesunden Salamisemmeln aus dem Billa und Bier angereichert, damit er die volle Österreich-Dröhnung kriegt. Mhm. Ja. Und werden fortsetzen. Ja, hast du irgendwelche Themen, die dir am Herzen liegen oder die du abhandeln musst?
Ja, ich kann schon erzählen, aber es sind so dies und das Themen. Also ich habe ein Manga gelesen von Osamu Tezuka namens Adolf. Ist geschrieben in den 83er Jahren, 1983. Dann habe ich mir angeschaut, Horrorfilme, bald kommt das Slash-Filmfest. Horrorfilms,
yes, yes. Jason.
Ja, yeah, this is a little bit old one. This is a new about newer movies and I saw, just to get into the right mood for this festival, It Follows and The Descent, I think.
The Descent.
Yes. Yes. These are these two movies.
Did you see Babadook?
Yeah.
That was great. Wasn't that great?
It was one of my favorites from the last year.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, let's...
Okay, begin. I have nothing else to report. My only item is that I finished writing my blog posting about Scratch Conference Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. It's linked in the last podcast and will be linked in these show notes.
Okay, cool.
And so I think we will get out as much words as possible from Derek.
Yeah, of course.
But eat in peace and...
I can eat and talk.
Yeah, okay, you can eat and talk. Derek, can you make a quick introduction of yourself for our listeners? Where you're from, what you do?
Yeah. So my name is Derek Breen, and I am visiting from the United States. I live in Boston, and I just finished writing a book that teaches kids how to do computer design, animation, and video game development, called Scratch for Kids for Dummies. So it's one of those yellow and black for dummies books that are all over the place. And I spent 5 months locked in a room through an awful winter working on this book that was supposed to be fun for kids. Had very little fun, but I kept telling myself, when I'm done, I'm going to Europe. I'm 45 years old. I've never been to Europe before. I haven't left the United States since 1991. I've never had a passport. I've only ever traveled the world by battleship, and I only got to go places that we were going to bomb. So I'm very happy to be in Europe. And
not on a bombing mission.
Not on a bombing mission, although I may bomb on this podcast.
Well, we're delighted to have you here.
Of course.
Okay, how to best start? Derek, we met at the Scratch Conference in Amsterdam. He was there in your function as traveling author. Can you just give a short summary of your impressions? I think it was your first Scratch conference too, and you had some background with Scratch from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Can you just say what your impression was?
I went to the Scratch conference last summer at MIT in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Okay. And I was working at MIT then, so it was not a very far way to go to go to a conference. Last summer, I met incredible people from all over the world. That was my favorite part of the conference last year. And there were some things that I was not as happy about, but I really love Scratch and the community. And so when I heard that it was going to be in Amsterdam, I thought that would be the perfect way to start my European tour. I would go to Amsterdam, I would do some presentations, and then I would try to find people in all the cities that I wanted to visit and like sucker them in and sort of like try to charm them and then be invited to stay with them. And it worked. It totally worked. I'm sitting now as someone who's hosting me in Vienna, Austria. But it was really great. This conference in particular in Amsterdam was so much fun because there was such a diversity of people, not just from different countries, but different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. There were teachers, there were designers, there were programmers.
There were women.
Yeah, there were women. There were more women than men, which at a tech conference is unthinkable.
Yeah.
And so it was so much fun. And everybody had these different things to share. So it was a Scratch conference, but people were talking about way more than just Scratch. So there was a lot of robotics and a lot of electronics and storytelling and music. I couldn't have been happier there. And I guess I made an impression with some of the talks that I gave. One in particular, because I tore up my own book and people thought, what is he doing? But I wanted to share my work with people any way that I could. And I was really inspired by the people, particularly the Dutch, who are so passionate about open source. And they're just like, and so often my first day there, I kept hearing, why can't you give your book away? Why are you selling your book? Why are you making money from Scratch? And instead of taking the American stance of thinking, oh, come on, I did all that hard work, I deserve to be paid for it, they really started affecting the way that I thought about it. And so by the end of the conference, I just wanted to give it to everybody. I'm like, here's a box of books.
So you become open source brainwashed in Amsterdam?
Yeah. I believed in open source for a long time, but I think I became radicalized in Amsterdam.
Cool. Very good. Yeah. What was your impression of the talks you have seen and of the audience that you have talked to? So what was this? Was the feedback useful for you?
Yeah, definitely. My biggest disappointment at the conference is that I didn't get to go to more presentations and more workshops because I gave 4, I think. And then there was a 5th one that I was kind of helping out with. So it meant there were a lot of like, I was either doing something or preparing for something or recovering from something. But I did get to some great workshops. There was one workshop on different input devices for computers, and I worked with a group with a Leap motion controller. It's like a little, it's like half the size of a pack of cigarettes, and it works sort of like Microsoft Kinect so that you can do sort of, it detects where your fingers are in relation to it, and also the angle of your hand. And so we designed a virtual cello that was playing the music in Scratch, and we could kind of like finger with one hand and then sort of like bow with the other. We didn't get the bow working, but we got the fingering working.
So you program air cello to work, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And we did it in like an hour because Scratch is so easy to program. And it was great because the software didn't work on my computer. Someone else didn't know how to program. And so all these people just kind of came together and did what they could and very quickly created something. And that's, the conference felt so, one of the things that I think worked much better here than in Massachusetts, in these states, is there was room for spontaneous stuff. So like there were these teach meets at night at the VOG, like in this old tower where they used to torture people. But we were sharing these just little talks or just showing what we had done that day, and people were drinking beer and stuffing their faces with good food. But those sorts of things made the conference feel so much bigger, like so many people could participate. And so I was so inspired by that I'm going to DojoCon, the Coder DojoCon in Ireland next month, and I'm not on the program. I'm just going to go to a bunch of stuff and like sign up for some open slots and just see if people want to mess around with Scratch but I don't want to be like the author of this book. I just want to go and kind of play, and that's a whole world that I haven't worked in Coder Dojo before. So I'm really excited about this idea that dojos are spreading all over the world. And getting excited about Code Week, European Code Week that'll be next month and in October. I mean, and the ways that the Coder Dojos are coordinating, like, it's so cool what kids get to do now. Like, it's awesome.
We've also seen in one meeting at the conference, mm-hmm. there was a film about Belgium, and Belgium somehow managed to get every school kid of a certain age group into the capital, into a giant soccer stadium, and get them like a big tech day with workshops in Scratch and workshops in robotics. So they really made a nationwide effort to get kids into coding. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This was impressive, and yes. they try to reproduce that in other countries like Netherlands. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, and there was a lot of
momentum.
Yeah, and a lot of stuff with Raspberry Pi, in part because the Pi has Scratch as part of its distribution. Okay. It's
shipped with the distro Raspbian.
And one of my favorite, I love the Ignite talks, where you would go and sit, and people had 5 minutes to do these little talks. I did one, but there were a few that moved me to tears. Like Linda Lucas, her keynote address. Did you see Linda
the
Lucas?
Hello,
Ruby. So this woman from Helsinki wrote a children's book called Hello Ruby that teaches little kids and particularly little girls about coding in the real world. And she developed all these projects that are like arts and crafts, but
she
with computers.
She made a children book with graphics for children. Mm-hmm. She designed her own characters.
And she got the money to print and distribute it through Kickstarter.
Yeah, she made
she did a Kickstarter campaign. It was so successful. I can't remember exactly, but she said her book is something like 60% of the publishing market for all of Finland. Like, from this one children's book.
Is she really Finland?
I'm sorry.
I have the impression she is Dutch.
I'm sorry. I think she's Dutch, uh-huh. but she lives in Helsinki.
Ah, okay. But she, imagine a non-professional author who was not an author before have an idea to write a children book about programming as a very geeky run thema and get kickstarted and get funded and hugely successful.
Yeah,
she was a very inspiring personality. So her talk, she was very jumpy and likable. So mm-hmm. very excited that all this happened to her. So she gave a good mood to the audience.
And you can see her video on Kickstarter. It's a beautifully produced little video. Mm-hmm. And also her keynote, all the keynotes are available on the Scratch
homepage,
Amsterdam website. I think it's Scratch 2015 AMS.
It's linked in my blog, who is linked
great.
In the
great.
Show notes.
Yeah, that one was really special. And there was Frank, is it Sabati? Well, it's Frank's last name. He was one of the Dutch organizers of the conference, and he hosted the Ignite talks. But then in the session where I presented, he did the last talk. And his talk was about how he brought grandmothers into these coding classes, into these technology classes. Kids had these robots and they wanted to personalize them with fabric and sewing. So they had all the grandmothers come in and sew the costumes for the robots, and it bridged the generations. Mm-hmm. It was so inspiring, like, just great. Like, yeah, to be moved at a technology conference. Mm-hmm. Like, not just to your feet cheering, but like, like, it was so good.
It really was very rich in the connection you could make with other persons from diverse of backgrounds, teachers, educators, librarians, hackers. So it was for me one of the richest conferences, tech conferences in this area of meeting interesting people, mm-hmm. like a chaos communication
camp.
Yeah. So that you really, you came back and richer with more friends than you have gone in.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't about exchanging business cards. It was about really telling your story and who you were. Like, we met on the train, right?
No, on the train station. I was calling you because
station.
I did not know where the conference
was.
Right.
When we got to the science park. And so we both had the Scratch bags. So everyone's walking around Amsterdam with these bags with this cartoon cat with wooden shoes. So we could spot each other really easily. And it was great. You just knew, like, we were sort of family because we had this brand, like this Scratch cat. And then we ended the conference all singing together.
You was in the church? At
yeah.
The sing song?
Yeah.
I think it's in YouTube, but I didn't.
Yeah, it is. It's also in, there's the Scratch video update video. They do this every few weeks. It's a video thing.
Okay.
Rick Arose and Eric, who were at the conference, and they were the last two of the last people to speak. They were in that panel on the last day with the young people. Oh, and that was so great. So one of the last panel was the future of Scratch. And so they had two people from MIT who managed the Scratch community. One is a PhD student at MIT, and the other one I think is a full-time employee for Scratch. But then they had three young people. I think the oldest one was like a freshman in college, and they're from three different countries, and they were talking about how Scratch changed their life, like kind of brought them into adulthood, and they met all these people through doing one woman like co-edits the I think she was from Italy too, the Italian Scratch wiki, and someone else is involved with welcoming new people into Scratch and getting them started, and
so you can find your role in a your role in a technical community even without being a tech person or a coder. There's room for participation for everyone who want to get involved.
And that's part of what I love about Scratch, is because it's online and people can remix and share and learn from each other. It's become like, it's like Wikipedia. It's actually, I think it's better than Wikipedia because little kids can go online and there's no, you're not being censored. You're just, you create your thing, and then if someone wants to use something, they click remix and you automatically have a credit. It's such an elegant little solution to it. Like, it's cool.
You know Scratch personally?
A little bit. No, only through you.
Scratch is this visual programming language. And they have in the 2.0 version, who works online with browser, they have inbuilt a GitHub-like system where you can fork and share your projects. So it's from all thousands of projects worldwide, you can click on each one, see inside, you can like it and give it stars. And with one button, this project is yours to fork and modify and reshare and comment.
Have an overview about what projects are there.
Yeah, so you are in, it's like an inbuilt GitHub system for Scratch people. Mm-hmm. So you get really the kids also into this sharing culture of open source.
Yeah,
we have a new podcast guest who is a black dog.
Yeah,
and it's a bit creepy.
But he goes away. I think he wants my sandwich.
Yeah, maybe you should eat
it
faster.
Beer.
he's like big like me, and I have 105 kilos.
Looks
at
like
the moment.
A banana.
I also discovered today. I had a nice Scratch moment. I was trying to get my blog posting linked from the Scratch wiki sites and so on. And then I discovered that another German guy wrote a nice summary about his experience at the Scratch conference, and I started to read it. And then I was thinking, wow, I have seen 5% of what he described. There was so much going on that I simply missed because I was talking with someone or being in another room. So I have to rewatch all these videos and
so
make connections. After post-processing the conference and what was going on.
It's so true. There were like four or five things happening at once a lot of the times. Yeah. Like so much. And I'm so looking forward as more of the video appears.
Yeah.
I've been rewatching. I even rewatched some of the stuff that I was there because I was thinking about where I was going next, or what am I going to have for dinner in Amsterdam tonight, or what time does the red light district turn on the red lights? Except they were mostly blue. I don't know why that was. Maybe they look better in blue.
I must also say that I always wonder, what are all these people who manage to get Wi-Fi connection in a conference, because I never get Wi-Fi connection. Yeah. What are they doing with their laptops when there is a talk? And now I learned, mostly they do preparing their own speech or rearranging PowerPoint slides or something of the extremely utterly idiotic stuff that they could do in the toilet or somewhere else too.
I saw a lot of that too. Sometimes people are tweeting.
Yeah.
And that's cool when it happens. But yeah, there's some of that. And I definitely was guilty of doing that at least once that I can think of.
But your tweet gets reblocked.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Oh, but I want to talk about I want to talk about Turtle Stitch.
Please do.
Like, so
Andreas project with programmable stitching machines with Snap, which is a fork of Snap.
And so one of the people that I met at the conference, also from Vienna, was this incredible woman, Andrea Mayer? Maya. Mm-hmm. Andrea Maya. Here in Vienna. And I had never heard of the software that she developed until I saw the program. I saw the program on the web because I was always checking to see if I was in it and whether they got it right and when I was going to be on and who I was going up against.
With program, you mean the schedule of the talk.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The schedule. Mm-hmm. And I saw they had these two master classes. So the day before the conference, if you got there a day early, you could do a full day or like 4 hours or something on one thing.
In Wagner Society, in this medieval fortress.
Yeah, so cool.
Perfect party location.
And I couldn't, my plane arrived too late to go to any of those, but one of the master classes was by a friend of mine, Eric Rosenbaum.
He's an extremely cool guy. He's a 3D beetle turtle, so we have three-dimensional turtles.
Yeah, super cool. And so it works just like Scratch, but you could do 3D, and in his course, he also had 3D printers. So people could design these 3D objects and then print them and take them with them, which is so cool. And he also designs music apps, these sort of, do you know the word synesthesia or synesthetic? The mixing of the senses. Maybe it's something different in German. Like someone hears music and they associate it with colors, or someone smells something and they associate it with touch, or it's the cross senses. Mm-hmm. And Eric likes to explore the intersection of visual arts and music. Mm-hmm. So he makes apps. Like, he has one app called Singing Fingers. Do I have it on my iPod Touch? Hopefully I do, because it's so cool. Yes, I do. So singing, it's much easier to show it, and you podcast audience can imagine what we're doing. I'm holding up my little iPod Touch, and so what I'll do is each of you needs to do some kind of sound while I paint. So just do some kind of sound. And then,
whoa.
And I'll do, ooh. And so what I'm doing is painting on the screen, and it's recording those sounds. It's like a sampler, and then I can...
You can work with these sounds.
Yeah, I'm not working.
Oh, yeah.
But you can also... And so you can do all sorts of... But if we did it with music, I could do... Whoa, it sounds beautiful in Vienna. And then I can do...
You can play with your own voice well.
And you can...
On multi-touch, yeah.
So it's super cool. So that's called Singing Fingers.
And that's also from Eric Rosenbaum?
Yeah, I think it's iOS and Android. So he created that app. And then he has another app that I'm dying. Eric, if you're hearing this podcast, please finish Melody Morph. He demoed this and Melody Morph at the conference. Melody Morph is even more, you can do even more sort of music composition type stuff with it. It's so cool. He got his PhD last year from MIT. He was in the lifelong kindergarten group at the MIT Media Lab, which is the group that developed Scratch. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they also developed the technology in Lego Mindstorms, the popular Lego robotics kits, and many other cool things. And Eric is the co-developer of Makey Makey, one of the coolest little electronic kits that you can transform real-world objects into controllers for your computer. So, like, you could make a Pac-Man game controller out of four slices of pepperoni pizza for each direction. You could just do 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 do. Or you could play, you could make Mario platforms that you actually jump on to control your Mario game, or like
so
anything.
It's basically a very simple gamepad controller with a steering wheel and two buttons. And then you have connecting pins, I think, that you
even
can
less than that. Really all it is it goes into your USB port, and the connection pins are for what controls it. It doesn't have any built-in controllers. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. You just kind of, you can map it to your arrow keys. Mm-hmm. So, like, they show a demo, and you can see, Makey Makey was also a Kickstarter campaign. They raised like over $300,000 US in 1 month. And these were guys that were making, I don't know, $35,000 a year at MIT as, as graduate and PhD students. So, in the demo, they show someone lays out all these bananas and they clip these alligator clips with wires, and then the bananas become like a piano and you can play songs. And now in New York, DJs are building their own interfaces with Makey Makey to control their music. And there's a really heartwarming story about a father who has a child with developmental difficulties, and his father developed a computer keyboard for his son that would work using Makey Makey as the, it's like really cool. So that's Eric Rosenbaum. Yeah. He taught the turtle, Beetle Blocks workshop. And then the other workshop masterclass that was happening was called, Turtle Stitch or Stitch Code. Did you do both?
Both. Yes. Two projects.
And so I didn't know that, that Horst, how do I say your name?
Yeah, like, it's okay.
Horst.
it's annoying.
So I didn't know that Horst was part of that. When I met him, we didn't really talk about that.
Well, I'm not really involved in Turtle Stitch. I'm just a friend of Andrea, sure. And helped her doing a workshop in a school using Turtle Stitch.
Yeah,
but I'm not a developer of it.
And was it the master class that you were helping out in on that first day?
I was at the pre-conference. I got invited to the Amsterdam conference because of Andrea Meyer. She told me I should go there. And yes, I was making some pictures and photographs, but I was really slacking. I was more doing podcasts and
so she made such an impression on me before I even got to the conference, because I saw this little demo video of Turtle Stitch. And so Turtle Stitch takes Scratch. I mean, with Scratch you can make animation, you can make music. Yeah. And so it uses the same blocks. So Snap is like Scratch. You use blocks to do basic programming. But Andrea's idea that is so cool is she thought, well, if you could use blocks to program designs and then communicate with an embroidery machine, you could sew your graphics onto clothing, onto fabric and stuff. And it's so cool. I didn't get to go to the master class. So I had to get Andrea to invite me to Vienna.
So
and I didn't know I was going to be able to do it, but fortunately she was at one of my talks. And then what really worked well is she won my book in a drawing on the last night before we all left Amsterdam. And so that meant I definitely had her then. I was like, you won my book. You've got to let me come. And I already had a host in Vienna. But I really wanted to play with her embroidery machine. I really wanted to stitch some stuff. And so I was just with her all day yesterday, and it was so incredible. Two different things. Turtle Stitch lets you program these really complex patterns with very simple code. Mm-hmm. And so spent like 10 minutes dragging some code blocks and then printed out this beautiful, cool pattern with different threads on fabric. And then Stitch Code lets you draw directly into the computer like Photoshop or something, or like GIMP or Inkscape. And then it'll print exactly what you just drew in thread. Mm-hmm. It'll stitch it directly in. And so I did my little Scratch robot. I was able to trace it. And I couldn't be more excited. I'm so excited about Turtle Stitch. I'm coming back to Vienna in October, and I'm going to do some work with Andrea, a little bit of work on promotion, and also we're going to do some workshops as part of Code Week. So we're going to do some workshops here, and then I'm going to go to Rome and do some workshops in Rome. So I'm really excited.
So for you, the whole concept of meeting people and going around Europe was working.
Yeah,
at the Scratch conference.
I mean, my main goal was to get on a podcast in Vienna. Look what I did. But
purpose of life fulfilled.
I mean,
bucket list.
It's so great. I've never been to Europe before. I hadn't left the United States in all those years. And so I didn't want to just come and stay in hotels. Mm. Plus I'm broke. So it's like if I did the hotel thing, I could only be in Europe for maybe a week. At the most, like a week. And so by staying with people who I met, it's much less expensive, so I can stay in Europe longer. So originally I was going to be here for 3 weeks, but so many people have been hosting me. Now I'm staying for 6 weeks and going to more cities. And almost everywhere I go, I'm being hosted by people I met at the Scratch conference, which is so cool. And then when I'm with them, they want me to do Scratch with their kids. And I love doing Scratch with their kids, if they have kids. Or some people are setting up workshops. So like I taught a Scratch workshop in Munich last week. Actually a week ago tonight. And I'll be teaching a workshop in Paris a week from Saturday, and then doing other workshops and eventually in Ireland.
So you got these geeks because of the Scratch conference, because of the people you met there.
Yeah, Munich is the only exception because I had a good friend who set up a workshop prior to the conference. But I was able to connect with some people from the conference while in Munich. And I swear I'm on Twitter and LinkedIn and Facebook 2 hours a day, almost entirely with people from Amsterdam, from the conference. Some are in Italy, some are here, but we're all staying in touch and we're sharing. Oh, did you see this cool thing? Or, oh yeah, that video's just been posted. Or did you see the mural that they did on Saturday? There's a picture of that woman that you were talking to who was up on, it's the greatest. Like, I love it. And I'm learning a tiny bit of German, and I'll use my smidgen of French, and then I'll be learning a little Italian, and so I get to spend time in people's homes. So I have such a better sense of Vienna because I just spent 4 days with a family, having breakfast in the morning and going to the kindergarten to pick up the youngest. And so I really feel like I have a much better sense of the country. I don't need to go to 20 museums. I don't need to go to 30 cities in 20 days.
And so Europe in a week. Casual. So this.
Yeah. The goal is I need to go anywhere I go. It's for 4 days or more, but it has to be at least 4 days. Cause if it's not 4 days, I can't get a feel for the place. And I try to do one cultural thing in each place, just one. So here it's the Leopold Museum that I'm going to tomorrow. I really want to see the Schiele exhibit. He's one of my favorite artists of all time. One of the most incredible drawings I've ever seen in my life was one of his at the MoMA in New York, the Museum of Modern Art. And they have some of the most iconic Picassos and Rembrandts. But it was this little drawing of this nude woman and the lines, and it was the only piece of art that I saw in that whole museum that brought tears to my eyes. That one little drawing, like, and I was already a fan of his work before that, but that was the first time I'd seen it in person. So tomorrow, Vienna, I'm warning you, if you're at the Leopold, it's gonna get a little dusty. And Klimt, I'm sure there'll be some great stuff to see. Like, but in the States, Klimt is like the schoolgirls love Klimt on lunchboxes and notebooks and posters. College girls with these huge posters because of the colors and the gold. And so I really like it. I love the patterns as a designer. But he's like a pop star in the States, like an Andy Warhol or something. Whereas Schiele
is not yet popular.
Yeah, it's much more, much smaller scale. And of course his work is only a short period of time, right? He died very young. And also his work is very erotic, and that doesn't play as well. Yeah, in the States, you don't see those in poster stores or on lunchboxes or iPhone cases.
Well, thanks, Derek. That was cool. Yeah. We'll talk a bit about some net stuff so that you can chip in whenever you want.
Yeah, I have. You wanted to talk about
nothing special. Just that Linux I wrote my podcast. Ah, yeah, Linux Voice. Thanks for reminding me. I read Linux Voice. Linux Voice. I think it's issue 19. And as usual, it's great. It's soon to be Creative Commons licensed issue with a 4-month waiting period they have usually. And It was full of nice articles. You also read it?
I read it, partly, and I really liked it.
You read the EPUB version?
No, I read the PDF version,
oh, cool,
but it
cool.
Worked perfectly fine on my tablet, mm-hmm. so it was a great magazine experience.
Yeah.
It looks very, very well, and then read an article about GNOME, the new version.
Yeah.
And got an overview. They compared, I think, several Office packets under Linux, OpenOffice, LibreOffice,
yeah.
and so on. It was very interesting, and I liked it very much. I'm always searching about Linux-related blogs, but
yeah.
I think the magazine is an own media format that works very well on me. So it was much fun to see it through.
Yeah. Also, yeah. must say, I like gladly it. Renewed my subscription of Linux Voice. So, and it's my only news magazine I subscribed.
Mm-hmm. So, where I pay for. Was an article about Python?
Yeah, they have always Python stuff.
Yeah.
In it. And
okay.
So, and a fun fact is that they search writers, actually, who can write tutorials.
You're thinking.
Are you going to do one?
I think I.
You plan.
I plan, yes. Yeah. Yeah, so let's talk in 1 year.
Yeah.
About plans.
1 year?
Yeah.
I wrote a whole book in 5 months. You can write an article this month. Before I return to Vienna. So I'm going to lay down the gauntlet. That's what we would say in the States. I challenge you to have an article by October 1st.
Yeah. Good point. That,
it's better challenge than the next bucket.
Yeah, yeah.
Take it.
Become a famous tech author.
It. It's okay. Win-win.
Yeah, we will see. We will see.
Oh.
Yeah. Now, a part of that... Wikipedia at the moment is trying to get money.
Mm-hmm.
And I was willing to pay them, despite some crutches I have, and I was trying to pay with my Bitcoin app, Mycelium, and it did not work. And then I wrote Johnny from the podcast, the Mycelium expert, and I wrote the text, also the donation support at Wikipedia, who instantly wrote back and said, yes, they will forward the problem to the Bitcoin payment trader they use. But I can only report that with my Mycelium app, it was not possible to donate at Wikipedia. So they got
nothing. I saw they have a big banner at this time, so Wikipedia, to remind you.
They have so in pop-up.
I once paid sometimes with a banner action where the Jimmy Wales was looking at you.
Yeah, Jimmy Wales. Now that's my only thing I can really report.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not much else. I teach a Scratch workshop at the moment for children.
Okay.
In a company, so they're younger children.
In a company.
I'm insourced. Insourced. And normally I make Python workshops for children, but this time they're younger children, so I use Scratch and they're happy and it's very relaxed. I can maybe at next week report what the final projects were.
Okay.
At the moment, it will be one zombie shooting game, and and then I think the younger kids want to remake Mario, this jump and run.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, and I must say, some kids are incredibly good with graphics, especially vector graphic programs, because that's not everyone's forte. Where you have to really use the objects and draw them instead of paint them. And this one kid, I think, is in 9 or 10 years or so. It's amazing, better than and with 45, just make beautiful comic-like vector graphics.
Wow.
So there's his own talent to can Scratch as an inbuilt paint vector graphics.
Yeah, I worked several times to work on our logo with Inkscape, but it's difficult.
It's difficult, yes.
You should see the I taught just a tiny bit of vector graphics to Andrea's 10-year-old daughter this morning.
Yeah.
This afternoon, right before I came to your apartment. And she created this really cool cat, and all the legs were separate so she could animate it, and she had it moving across the screen, and then she decided to put it underwater. I don't know why. That's what you do when you're 10. But I thought, oh, if it's underwater, then I can teach you about cloning. So she had these bubbles that were randomly being generated and would float up to the top and then pop when they got to the top. It was really cool. But she did a great job, especially the legs of the cat were so great with the distinct shape, like, very cool.
Well, I can add, inspired of the conference, I was trying out Snap. Snap is a fork-like project from from Scratch, but thankfully it does not use Flash technology. It uses JavaScript.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it works with less proprietary software. Mm-hmm. And I was looking for my most always searched item, but it does not work neither in Snap, neither in nor in Scratch, and this is a clone-to-clone collision detection. So if you make clones of little sprites like bullets out of a machine gun, then the clones have a collision detection inbuilt to if they touch another sprite, like
which,
the player.
Which is important for game programming.
Yeah, but
example.
If you have a clone of a player object, like let's say zombies, you have a lot of zombies, and you make one zombie and clone them 50 times, and then you want to shoot these zombie clones with the clones of your machine gun bullet, which is also a clone, you have no clone-to-clone detection. So one of these object must be a real sprite and not a clone. It's
okay,
a bit technical. And there are solutions how to solve that in Scratch, but they are very cumbersome. Also very
There's no easy way to do
that. And I think if there are so many clones of Scratch, and on the conference I was feeling everyone is writing his own Scratch clone with all this visual programming logic, please, guys, make a clone-to-clone collision detection. I really need that for my games. That's yeah, that's all.
Yes, what can I...
You have films?
The films or the thing? I didn't mention first. I rediscovered the podcast, which I remembered because they made a new session, and so I knew again that I had...
Which podcast?
Wir schweifen ab, it is called, and it's a game podcast about indie games.
And it's in German or English?
It's in German. Okay. There's two guys, Bernd and Philipp. The one says about himself he likes story-driven games, which is an interest I share. Yeah, and he's a musician, so she has always a very good perspective on the sound design of a game. And I think the chemistry between the two is very good. No, it's to Philipp and Bernd.
Ah, two men.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. And they are podcasting very in the time period, so very long between the single episodes. And the episodes are very long, so from 3 to 4 hours.
Oh, wow. We Biertaucher really salute you.
Yeah. From time to time, yes. I can recommend this podcast because I have several game podcasts in my podcatcher, but the angle of indie games is very interesting, and they talk very profound about it. For example, in one episode, they talk very long about the film you mentioned once, Indie Game the Film.
Mm-hmm. I love that film.
And they they are very interested in the stories behind the games. Mm-hmm. Also besides of in the game the film and you get a glimpse into the scene of the indie programmers, and when they talk about an indie game, they talk about what games did this programmer make.
So they get really
before.
In depth
because of the indie scene has so many genres they covered, it's very interesting for me, and I'm listening to this, and it doesn't happen often to me, but I listen it from episode one to
so you listen
now.
We listen to old podcasts,
yes,
the highest,
old stories,
highest,
and I try
price.
To keep up and to bookmark on Steam indie games that are interesting for me.
That sounds like you really found an interesting podcast.
Yes, I can really recommend this podcast. I like it very much. Yeah.
Well, you should come to Boston next month because the Festival of Independent Games is at MIT.
Okay.
It's usually September.
Mm-hmm. And this is regularly once a year. It happens there.
Yeah.
Ah. Okay.
Yeah, annual. And one of the sponsors I was going to mention. Do you know? Does Indie Game? Does the Independent Game Magazine come here from the States?
Not really.
A magazine that's it's published on demand, and so it's pretty low budget, but it's pretty great. And they do a lot of what do they call them? Postmortems. So it's either a game that was successful or totally failed, and like all the things that the team learned from doing so it. It's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So also from a game developer perspective. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it might even be called Independent Game Developer Magazine. It's definitely the developer's perspective, yeah.
I will catch you back and in the show notes we will link. For German podcast listeners, I can also report that the subreddit German podcasts, also r subreddit from reddit.com, r podcast.de, I think, has a wiki where German podcasts listened, also in a wiki. And the wiki can, as far as I understood it, can be edited if you have an account at Reddit, which is a bit easier to do than a media wiki, where you usually have to register and then it's so not really working. So I did an entry for us.
Perfect.
I hope that
new
will,
podcasts on this.
It's very, I'm not sure if it's already dead or just nobody maintaining it, but if that gain momentum, I think it could be a one central hoop for German podcast listeners, because there are some sites who collect German podcasts, but they're mostly so advertised written scam sites.
Cool. Yeah. Short and simple. I have two horror films.
Please, please.
In midst of September, the Slash Film Fest is happening, and so I'm trying to get into the mood. So I watched two horror films after a longer period of time that I missed out at the genre. And I watched The Following is the first movie. And, also, It Follows.
It follows.
It's a film from, 2014, I think, from 4 years. And I read about this and I listened to many podcasts and, there they, you got a peek at the story and I heard the story and I said, that's not a film for me. It's, it sounds a bit trashy, don't know, but you must judge. Then I looked at the Google image search and I was not sure, but beside we talked about Baratuk and they compared it to Baratuk, was a very, very good film, and this is has also a very high quality. So I gave it a chance and I watched it and I liked it very much. But I don't know because of the actual things that happened in the film or because of the aesthetics and how it was told, the story. So what is the story? The story is a bunch of young friends. They're hanging out in the suburbs and one girl has a date with a guy. And this guy has a dark secret, and one of these dates, he makes the girl during they are making out pass out and drags her into a garage and tells her the following story, that he has a grudge on him. That he has a and this crutch consists that anytime any person could be possessed by an evil phenomenon, and if it is possessed, it comes towards you and tries to kill you, but it doesn't run. It can only take one step after another in a very slow motion, and you don't know when it's happening. But you can get rid of this grudge if you sleep with another girl.
Sexual transmitted horror.
Which is, normally the horror rule is if you have sex, you get killed. So in this movie, you get sex, you might get not killed. But the mechanics include so that if you have given the grudge to another person and this person dies, then the grudge comes back to you. So the decision is, what should she do? To whom should she give the grudge? And so the story, I'm not happy with it, but it has... It's You can't tell in which time it really plays. It's kind of timeless. 80s, but mm-hmm. it's time of 80s. But it's an alternate reality, I would just mm-hmm. say, because there are cell phones. Cell phones are normally they're poison for horror films because you're always connected. But in this version of this reality, mm-hmm. only one girl has a smartphone. Mm-hmm. And even this smartphone doesn't look like our smartphones. Mm-hmm. It's like a shell.
A seashell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She reads text or something. Mm-hmm. And there are many. It's reminded me very on the classical horror flicks from the 80s. Especially the sound was very good set. Mm-hmm. It reminded me on movies made by Carpenter, this atmosphere and the sound. It was... It's really, if you're into this movie of this era, you should give it a try because there are several, they try to quote this kind of movies mm-hmm. and especially the sound. I was very skeptical mm-hmm. about it, but
you sound very impressed.
Yeah. And
it was creepy and horror, or was it trash?
Yes. It isn't too bloody. One part of this fascination about this film is because the monsters or the persons, they are mm-hmm. moving, they're moving very slow mm-hmm. and people are acting and don't see the danger coming. But you, mm-hmm. from the viewer's perspective, you see it a long time before the victim mm-hmm. sees it. It's really creepy. Yeah?
Original Night of the Living Dead where people didn't know what the threat was.
Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. Romero, yes. I have also several things, films open from Romero I have to watch.
More to watch,
but not before the stage film fest. Okay, yeah. This?
I have a very short TV series to recommend.
Okay.
It's a rom-com, romantic comedy mm-hmm. about office space. It's called Kevin from Work.
Kevin from Work.
Yeah, okay. There's actually much chatter in the TV Addict websites about it, and mm-hmm. I think it's nice. It's nothing special. It's from the guys who made How I Met Your Mother.
Ah, okay.
So
it's a sitcom-like.
Sitcom-like, a bit loser-like guy is in love with his female pretty coworker and. Managed to fail. And lots of funny co-stars and side roles. So, I don't know how long it will run, but I've seen two or three episodes and mm-hmm. it was nice. So it's, but yeah, you want to see more.
It works.
It works, yeah. You know, or...
I don't know it. Yeah. I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it yet. Yeah. Like the only show I've been following of the new shows is, have you heard of Mr. Robot?
Yeah. Mr. Robot.
It's really interesting. I mean, the first three or four episodes, I was totally absorbed in it. It goes a little astray after that, but it's worth seeing for those first few episodes.
It's about a black hat versus white hacker, so hacker culture.
Very deep in hacker culture. Yeah. And he's also, he's maybe not autistic, he's Asperger, sort of Asperger's, although it's not clear. And he manages his state of mind with narcotics. So he's also a drug addict, so it's a little bit like House, like Dr. House. And it's a little bit like War Games, and it's a little bit it's a thriller, and it's pretty interesting. The main actor is so fascinating in his role. He's so good that even when the show goes astray, it's still worth seeing. Like, what is he gonna do? Like, what? It's very different. I've really been enjoying it. I haven't seen it since I've been in Europe because I've had other things to look at. But
I watched the first episode actually
on Mr. Robot.
On Mr. Robot, I found it very interesting. I liked very much that Christian Slater showed up in the show. Yeah, yeah. I like this actor very much, and he was kind of. authentic. Also, they took some cliches, of course. So he always wearing a black hoodie and so on and so on, of course. But it was made very in an intelligent way. So you can, as a techie, you can
identify yourself.
You see the problem. So he's working in a big company and he makes the difference between the manager types and the techie types, and he's very surprised.
Corporate culture.
Of course. This is one part, and at one time he's asked what was wrong with the history, and he thinks back and he sees Steve Jobs and all the proprietary thing, and he works all the technical stuff that happens seems to be very good recherchiert.
So
I find it very interesting, and I'm looking forward to how it develops, because there's a bigger story arc. So I'm not the main the actor, the hacker or the programmer is not very. I don't know if I like him very much. Mm-hmm. It's part of the series. I think
it's tricky because he's an unreliable narrator.
Yeah,
and so that brings a different level. Like, you don't usually see that on television or even film. It's something that works much better in literature, and so it'll be interesting to see if they can maintain that.
Yeah.
And then when Christian Slater comes in, he's such a big star. Well, I mean, he's not a big star now, but he was when we were growing up. And so you have to wonder what that balance is going to be between his character, and you don't really know what his full agenda is. He's this dangerous, like, you don't know whether we're rooting for him or for him, or and I like that aspect a lot. It reminds me of Deadwood or something, to some extent The Sopranos, but really Deadwood, where in Deadwood it wasn't quite clear
who's the good guy.
Who's the most dangerous one in the room. It's hard to know, like
That's very interesting.
I can chip in from my favorite TV addict blog. It's in German. It's called British Sitcoms. It's a German guy who wrote in German about British TV sitcoms. And he wrote about Real Humans. And this is a remake of Ekta Menneken that I think you introduced me.
Yes.
So somehow I think they got...
It's already made a remake.
They make a remake, and I think this is the usual thing with a good non-US TV series like Braunschlag, the Austrian one, who got sold to US and then is completely remade with American actors and for American audience. Maybe, Derek, you can explain this to us, because it's a phenomenon I never understand. Why have the Americans to make a remake, retake every scene with different actors, just
especially
because they cannot dub the...
Like what were the girl with the dragon tattoo?
I understand if it's a cheap European small budget serie, but Ekta Menneken, you have seen it too. I think it was a big budget enough and cool. I don't see anything wrong with it, so I don't understand why
we remake
why
it, because it's not American. That's why we remake
it. So the American audience would be shocked if it's a non-US series where the cast were tied on the wrong side something.
I love watching foreign films and also foreign television shows. I think it's getting worse. I actually think it's getting worse in part because we're watching on smaller screens. And you literally can't read the subtitles.
Can that be a technical issue with the screen wide?
So I do think, but also we were remaking series long before small screens. Americans are ignorant. We don't know any other language but English, and we barely know English.
But a series can be dubbed. I mean, we grew up with dubbed series. Not that it's good. I think
also
subtitles
happens
with
British series like that.
We produce and send ours to the world. We didn't grow up reading subtitles. So in the States, it's not something that's part of our culture.
Even not subtitle, what's with dubbing? So with synchronizing.
Yeah, and there's something about dubbing, it just doesn't happen. I wonder if it's because Hollywood produces so much, there's literally no space for any other films or television series, or because it's all so, you know, they're all those American series. Mm-hmm. And so I say that recognizing that, like, I especially love some of the Scandinavian crime stuff, like Wallander, that kind of stuff. I love it. Yeah, and it's so atmospheric.
But
and
how you see it? You go down to special cinemas or TV channels?
I download it.
Oh, you download it?
Yeah. So I, almost everything so, I so watch
you watched it about
the,
over the internet?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
I go and download whole
And is there a special subculture or special TV or cinemas or TV special interest channels who make non-US channels?
I don't. I mean, even with hundreds of cable channels, I don't think there's anywhere where you can
watch no market for that.
A German series or an Israeli series. Strange. We only see them if they're remade as Homeland or they're remade as the one that you mentioned. Is that the one about cyborgs?
Yes, yes, it's cyborgs. Yeah. Yes, it's.
So I've seen a few episodes of that, and it's interesting. But yeah, it just we don't have access to anything that isn't in English for television. Mm-hmm. For film, it's a little bit better. Mm-hmm. There's some things. Mm-hmm. Some foreign films will air in the cinemas, but very rarely. Okay. Like the only film I've seen in German in years in the theater was Pina, the Wim Wenders documentary.
About
which
the
is phenomenal.
Dancer.
Yeah, okay. Choreographer Pina.
And this
Bosch.
Was then synchronized or?
Dance choreographer, yeah.
Was in German with subtitles?
It was in German with subtitles, and it was in 3D, which was kind of incredible. Okay.
This is one of the films I really would like to see.
It's so great. Yeah. And in particular because they use a still camera most of the time, and I think that's when 3D works really well. Like Hugo, the Scorsese film, he knew that you want to keep your camera still for 3D. Mm-hmm. So you really go into that depth of field. Pina it's one of the greatest documentaries I've ever seen. It is so meticulously put together, like, and I knew nothing about her work at all, but I have this special fascination for dance documentaries, and Wim Wenders I'm a huge fan of a lot of his films. And so when I got to Germany, I thought, oh, this is great. Right at the dinner table with this family in the suburbs, I go, ah, one of my favorite directors, Wim Wenders from Germany. And they're like, like, nothing happens in his films. We like the American version of City of Angels. We like City of Angels more than Wings of Desire. I'm like, no. Awful.
Yeah, he learned from one of the best from slow movies from Jim Jarmusch. So directly can tell.
Oh, and I love Jim Jarmusch's early films, like in particular, like Mystery Train is really cool. And have you seen the one
Down by Law?
Yeah, one Down by Law.
Man.
Down by Law. Dead Man, I love too. Dead Man, I really love. But Down by Law, in black and white, and just those incredible shots, like, good stuff.
Yeah.
And Dead Man, like, true deconstruction of the West.
Like,
it's so bizarre.
It's a slow.
The soundtrack, and it's all improvised.
Yeah,
you know?
So
it's, what's his name? Neil Young.
Ah, okay.
So Neil Young watched the film once while kind of fiddling with the guitar, and then he said, okay, record. And then he did the whole soundtrack. Now this is I don't know if this is true. Mm. But he just literally played it, and it's like this, it's just so slow. It's like no Western soundtrack you've ever heard in your life. Yeah. One guitar. Like, it's so good. It's so much fun to meet someone who appreciates the sound. Like, that I was really, really digging the way you were describing the horror film. Like, in America, almost nobody can actually remember
sound in a film. Like, they don't get it. And with a horror film in particular, it's so important.
It's so important. Yeah. It's like, for me, it's a key situation was when I was 15, or now I was younger, so 12 or 15, I don't know. I was with a friend that lived in the outskirts, so I had a way in the dark at to home, and we watched Halloween, and Halloween has this theme, and I walked home after this film, and okay, I never forget. It was tin-tin-tin, oh.
And the way they use silence, too, where you're really just hearing, like, leaves or something. Like, out here, sort of, like, anything could happen now where we are. And, yeah, Brian De Palma, like, Blowout. He made a whole film about sound, like a whole thriller film with John Travolta, who plays a sound artist who hears something. He hears a gunshot, and it's a remake sort of Blowout, of a Blow Up, the Antonioni film.
About the photographer.
I'm okay.
Okay.
So
it doesn't. Yeah. The beer doesn't go with Fisherman's Friend.
Okay. I would talk with Derek more about his very interesting life.
Yeah.
But I think maybe not now.
You can do another episode. I'll be back.
I'll be back in October. Okay.
Yeah, I'd love to do it again.
But thanks for.
Oh, my guest here. Oh,
yes. This was our first real English podcast.
Yes.
Okay.
Good practice. Good practice. I'm here for the first one.
Yeah.
Great.
We will know.
Wunderbar.
Wunderbar. Okay. Well, next week.
Next week. Same
if you want to join us, wherever you come from, find us in Innenhof 2, Altes AKH, Tuesday, 7:30 PM.
Yeah.
Then it was much fun.
Bye.
Thank you.
Dankeschön.
Super.
Good night.
Well.